News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along today.
Yeah, of course, it's always good to have folks along who are listening to us on Mobile Mornings. 251-343-0106 if you want to join the conversation on the text line. Right now it's time for our weekly guest on Tuesdays. That would be Quinn Hillier with Washington Examiner and QuinnHillier.com. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Quinn, I read an article of yours online, and it was a blistering attack on some of these protesters, agitators, lawbreakers, not just the protesters, of course. Sometimes we get those terms mixed up. Protesting, peaceful protest within the law. But what we're seeing on these college campuses is just way out of line. And so you had a word for them pretty much directly addressing one or all of the protesters. Let's talk about that.
Okay. And this was the second column in a row I wrote on sort of the same topic, because a couple of days before I talked to a Columbia professor who had gathered lots of evidence of what the protesters at Columbia and nationwide have been doing. And it's just appalling. So let me just very briefly start with what the professor said, which is that these protests are not just in reply to something Israel has done lately, and they're not only in the last 3 weeks. He detailed 7 full months of this stuff that started, remember, way back before Israel had even invaded Gaza.
If I remember, it started after the attack on Israel, like a celebration.
Yeah, they all over the country, on October 12th, just 5 days after Hamas went in and raped and beheaded people and put children in ovens and stuff like that, there was a national day, and this professor actually got a toolkit. There was already an organized toolkit that went to all these college protests. Somehow, the toolkit was ready days in advance of an October 12th national day of, protesting on behalf of Palestine. And as he said, this was even as they were, as Israel was still picking up body parts, picking out livers that had been cut out, picking out kidneys that had been cut out, picking up beheaded heads. And the toolkit was something that you just couldn't believe. It was calling the Hamas attack a historic win for the Palestinian resistance across land, air, and sea, calling for the total annihilation of the state of Israel, quote, from the river to the sea, and talked about actualizing revolution, which, by the way, they meant worldwide. And then the professor said, that this is not just about Palestine. This is revolution against the entire system. They call the entirety of Canada and the U.S. Turtle Island. They call it Occupied Turtle Island because they're saying none of us have the right to live here. Get that? Okay, so we're all occupiers too, and they are calling. They're using slogans directly quoting Mao Zedong, who of course was responsible for between 40 and 80 million excess deaths. He ordered or oversaw the direct killing of 40 to 80 million people. These are the folks organizing the protests, are these Maoist, anti-Western, anti-civilizational thugs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what the professor said. And so then I wrote yesterday, we've got to crack down hard on this. If you participate in so-called protests that aren't just free speech, but that actually break clear rules or laws. If you trespass, if you occupy, if you issue threats, if you vandalize, if you commit violence, if you advocate genocide or the entire destruction of entire nations, then you are not protesting. You are breaking the law or breaking the rules. You deserve to be suspended or expelled. And if you're breaking the law, you deserve to be arrested and prosecuted and imprisoned.
Quinn, I have a couple questions for you. One, and already somebody texting, why do we allow George Soros to continue financing and directing all of these anti-American activities? And while I'm not positive that Soros has his hand in this, I think it's very likely. What do you think? What is the point? Why do you think some of these big money left-wing activists that are either from here or not from here are pouring these resources into these campus protests? I mean, what's the end goal from those types?
These, they're literally Marxist. And, I mean, you know, this is not me, you know, seeing a communist under every bush, but when they're literally slanting Maoist, not just Maoist slogans, but quoting Mao directly, saying, as Mao said, quote, the left-wing foundations. There's a great book by a friend of mine, Phil Kent, out of Atlanta and Augusta, who's a longtime conservative writer. He did a book about 10 years ago called Foundations of Betrayal, and he outlined exactly how all these foundations work. Well, it is true that the Tides Foundation, the Open Society Foundation, which is Soros, mm-hmm. the Rockefeller Foundation, and the Ford Foundation have all given money to Students for Justice in Palestine, which is the national group that put out the toolkit that I just described. They see themselves as being the big money that's supposed to support the little guy, mm-hmm. and somehow by supporting the little guy, that means in practice that you divide the whole world into oppressors versus oppressed, colonializers versus colonialized, and you give money to the so-called oppressed or colonialized, and they're supposed to make things better. Well, they don't make things better. What they do is they tear down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's become evident. And that the colonizer has become a buzzword, certainly, over the last few years in a lot of the circles on the left. My other question for you here is, you lay it out, you know, you shouldn't be breaking laws, you shouldn't be trespassing, this and that. What would a proper protest look like? If Quinn Hillier were organizing a protest, something that you absolutely despised, that was being forced upon you, How would you organize a free speech protest? What does that look like?
Okay, actually, what it looks like is what happened at Georgetown in the mid-'80s when I was there, and this was actually for, you know, pretty good cause. It was against apartheid in South Africa, although there are different ways of going about ending apartheid, and I didn't necessarily agree with what these folks were advocating. But they built a shanty town, you know, the shanties, mm-hmm. the little lean-to shacks, a shanty town. Yeah. On the lawn at Georgetown. But what they did is they got permission from the administration. They got permits. They did it, and they said how long they were going to do it for. They didn't yell, especially yell anything hateful at anybody walking by. They had, you know, they had sort of organized things, and if you walked by, they would hand out flyers. They would ask you to come talk to them. They would explain what they were doing. They'd ask you to participate in a mock, you know, detainment or whatever. And they actually promoted discussion, and they broke no rules. Mm. And, you know, now they were for sort of more radical forms of getting rid of apartheid than I was. You know, I was totally for getting rid of apartheid, but you know, they were not necessarily renouncing violence to do it, but they weren't committing any violence, and they weren't yelling threats at anybody. They were polite, they were outgoing, and it helped start conversations, and people stopped and listened and maybe learned. That's how you do a protest. you actually try to change minds. Are these people right now getting anybody on their side? No. They're making everybody angry to no end. It's totally self-defeating unless their real purpose is not to help Palestine or the so-called Palestinians. Their real purpose is to undermine the very foundations of the Western order.
You know, when it comes down to this Marxism movement, we've seen it before, and maybe some in some ways I've read things where they're kind of all tied together, you know, from decades to decades ago to now. What's the fascination with Marxism when we kind of know where it ends? It never ends well.
Oh, they say, well, real Marxism has never been tried.
It's like the shot that never goes in. It's been tried time and time again.
Yeah, well, they say, oh, that wasn't real Marxism. That was Leninism or Stalinism. But real Marxism is peaceful. Have they ever actually read Marx?
Mm-hmm.
Marx calls for violent, bloody revolution. Okay? And, yes, he didn't specify all the details that Lenin and Stalin oversaw, where they would put people in barrels that had spikes inside and acid inside and roll them down hills. Okay? Marx didn't write that, but he called literally for violent revolution. He called for blood. And these idiots don't know how to read.
Unreal.
And then the response, separate from your response, what the universities have been doing is kind of the playbook now. It's just a fold-up shop. We saw it in COVID when things got hard, and you're seeing it now with protesters on their campus. I think UCLA was the first to cancel graduation. Now you have Columbia canceling graduation. So instead of pushing back, which there's been more pushback on this than other protests we've seen, but a lot of them are just saying, all right, no graduation. We'll just all go home.
Yeah, let's talk about the response of the adults in the room here, the administrators and presidents at these elite universities. They have no spines.
At University of North Carolina, faculty members started circulating a thing saying, we're going to refuse to give grades until you agree to the protesters' demands. Okay, if they refuse to give grades, they are not living up to their contracts. The right response is to fire those professors, because that tenure does not protect refusal to actually do your job. There are two examples of colleges that did it right. Ben Sass, the former senator from Nebraska, now is the president of the University of Florida, and we talked about this last week. He laid down the law. He said, if you break the rules, this is what's going to happen. When people broke the rules, that's exactly what happened, and they were expelled. Okay, at Fordham, Tanya Tetlow, who, by the way, I interviewed her when I was an alumni interviewer and she was applying to college, she is now the new president, or 1 year ago, president of Fordham University, and she's a liberal. But when Fordham started, you know, to do these sit-ins and taking over the lawn, about 5 hours later, she called in the cops and cleared it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do. And my hat is off to Tanya. My hat is off to former Senator Sass. That's what you do. If they want to peacefully protest and follow the rules, more power to them. But if they break the rules, crack down on them.
You say Vandy, same thing?
Yeah, well, and that was kind of early on. That was actually back during football season.
Wow.
When some Vanderbilt protesters went into, I think, the dean's office or somewhere important, and Vanderbilt ended up expelling those students right off the bat. So before kind of the nationwide movement, Vanderbilt was laying down the law.
It just seems, Quinn, I know we got to go to break, but it's maddening to me that things that would appear to be common sense to most of us, like when you see an uprising on the uprise, here it comes, and you just sit back and is that the strategy? Is it a lack of courage? What the heck is it?
Well, this Columbia professor that I talked to for so long said that they have, he gave me the letters that concerned faculty and students have written to the president of Columbia for 7 months saying, please do something about this. We support the right of these students to have their say, but not to intimidate us, not to threaten us, not to blockade us, not to tell Jews to get off campus. Please enforce your rules. And again, the administration at Columbia said, No, you deal with it.
Wow.
That's outrageous.
Agree.
Sure is. Quinn Hilliard, Washington Examiner, quinnhilliard.com. We'll come back. We'll talk about, I know we're a couple weeks past April 20th, but a little marijuana discussion here on Mobile Mornings on the way with Quinn Hilliard.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. I encourage you to go to WashingtonExaminer.com and look for Quinn's article called Memo to Rule Breaking Protesters. You deserve neither respect nor mercy. Pretty good read.
Yeah. With the time we have left with Quinn Hilliard this half hour, this part of the election cycle always entertaining to me. It's like the lowest hanging fruit where whoever happens to be the president starts making laws or making promises to voters in order to get their votes in November. It's often low hanging fruit, like student loan relief or, in this case, reclassifying marijuana, which is what the DEA apparently plans to do. They're expected to approve an opinion by DHS and reclassify marijuana from the most strict Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. Quinn, your thoughts on the Biden administration doing this 6 months before the election?
Okay, I could go on and on with examples of where the left keeps saying follow the science, and then but the science they say to follow doesn't say what it says it does, and then other science that is actually hard, fast, absolutely solid science they go completely against. This is one of the latter. I track this stuff for a number of years now, study after study after study. I mean, like 7, 8 major peer-reviewed studies on the effects of marijuana have shown that despite the, sort of the popular impression, marijuana is actually a much more dangerous drug than most people believe. And all the science shows it impairs cognition more significantly than alcohol or tobacco. It shrinks the brain's hippocampus, causes other brain damage. It increases depression and suicidality, boosts the risks of heart attacks by 25%, of strokes by 42%. It has bad effects on childhood and adolescent health. It's highly addictive. It even is dangerous at the genetic level, and I could go on and on and on. The absolute hard science is that marijuana is dangerous. Now, you can have a policy debate. If you take that into account, you can still have a policy debate on what's the best way to fight the scourge. But you don't have DEA on its own say that it's less dangerous than you've said for the last 50 years when all the science now says that it's more dangerous. And this is a purely political move by the Biden appointees because they think that's going to somehow get more young people to go vote for them.
Yeah, we saw that, and you'll see it with the student loan relief talk, too. But also, I mean, the Biden administration has talked about banning menthol cigarettes for 5 years now, and they came close, and then they decided, you know what, that might hurt us with the black vote a little too much if we ban menthol cigarettes. So that's out unless they get another term. But it's, you could just see how government works with an election on the horizon, how they're just going to put some of that low-hanging fruit out there. Quinn, for
they
folks,
don't follow the science. All they follow is the politics.
Yeah,
thanks a
sure.
lot, guys.
You got it, Quinn. Thanks a bunch, man.
All right, Quinn Hilliard, quinnhilliard.com and the Washington Examiner. And coming up, we turn up your voice, 251-343-0106, plus your chance to win a family four-pack to the EcoWild Outdoor Expo this weekend here in Mobile. We'll tell you how coming up on Mobile Mornings as we continue right after the break. Thanks, Kane. 835 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Coming to the text line here in a minute, 251-343-0106. This segment with the wide open phone lines brought to you by local personal injury law firm Tobias and Comer Law. And coming up later this month, National Boating Safety Week. And just like they did last year, there's a great series of videos that Tobias and Comer Law have made alongside the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency's Marine Patrol on several important boating safety topics, and they want to make sure everyone knows about these before you head out on the water this year. Some of the topics they cover include the importance of wearing life jackets, also for novice boaters getting out there, some things you need to know, plus the rules regarding paddle boards and other non-motorized vessels and how they compare to being on a motorized vessel. That's just some of the stuff you'll learn at TobiasComerLaw.com with National Boating Safety Week on the way. Plus, don't forget, you can vote for him in the nappies at VoteNappies.com. Brian Comer up for Best Personal Injury Attorney, and Tobias and Comer Law up for the Best Personal Injury Law Firm. Call him at any time. The number is 251-432-5001. That's 432-5001, a free consultation 24/7. And you can check him out, like I said, online at TobiasComerLaw.com.
All right, just making some notes here and want to get into some of the statements coming out of these Eastern universities now, dealing with what they've let, you know, get completely out of control, obviously. Number one, looking at Harvard. Interim Harvard University president, Alan Garber. Why is he the interim president?
Well, Claudine Gay was kicked out, right?
She certainly was. And turns out that there was...
I never thought I'd know the president of Harvard's name, by the way.
Yeah, no kidding.
By memory.
she became a story with their testimony in Congress, and then things just really unraveled for her. So here is the interim Harvard president. It's like, yeah, you know when a guy gets knocked silly on the sidelines and they give him the smelling salts and you see him like, oh, or a boxer?
Yeah.
They put the smelling salts under their nose here now.
Woke up a little bit.
Yeah, finally. Over the last 12 days, the encampment in Harvard Yard has disrupted our educational activities and operations. The right to free speech, including protest and dissent, is vital to the work of the research university, but it's not unlimited. It must be exercised in a time, place, and manner that respects the right of our community members to do their work, pursue their education, and enjoy their opportunity that a residential campus has to offer. The encampment favors the voices of a few over the rights of many who have experienced disruption in how they learn and work at a critical time of the semester. I call on those participating in the encampment to end the occupation of Harvard Yard. I write today with this simple message. The continuation of encampment presents a significant risk to the educational environment of the university. Those who participate in or perpetuate its continuation, will be referred for involuntary leave from their schools, he warned. Among other implications, students placed on involuntary leave may not be able to sit for exams, may not be able to continue to reside in Harvard housing, on and on it goes. All right, there's Harvard. Now, George Washington University. Isn't that where they put the...
They put the Palestinian flag on George Washington's head.
Yeah, right, okay. So the president there issued a statement talking about the vandalizing going on there. After the school's president issued a statement overnight saying that what is happening on campus is not a peaceful protest. Quote, history has repeatedly shown that there are many different effective ways for communities to express their differing viewpoints lawfully within the District of Columbia. In the last 7 months alone at GW, we have seen this play out on all sides of the war between Israel and Hamas. I know that some in our community and others across the country argue that this, too, is simply a peaceful protest, and at certain times it has been. This is President Ellen Granberg. However, when protesters overrun barriers established to protect the community, vandalize a university statue and flag, surround and intimidate GW students with anti-Semitic images and hateful rhetoric, chase people out of a public yard based on their perceived beliefs and ignore, degrade, and push GW police officers and university maintenance staff, the protest ceases to be peaceful or productive. Yeah. Yeah, good call. Mm. I fully support and encourage our community to speak out and engage in controversial and critical dialogues on these crucial issues as long as they occur within the limits of our university's policies and the district's laws. However, what is currently happening at GW is not peaceful. It is not a peaceful protest protected by the First Amendment in our university's policies. Tent encampment remains on the campus there, but it looks like he's about had it. And last but not least, at the University of Pennsylvania, remember who the president used to be there?
That one I don't know.
Elizabeth McGill.
Okay.
They showed her the door against the same thing. Of course, their weak reply to Congress, and this is before all the protests on campus, I believe, to this level. Anyway, interim University of Pennsylvania president Larry Jamison released a statement Monday that the ongoing anti-Israel encampment at the school is making its Philadelphia campus less safe. You think so? In a message sent out to the university community around 7 a.m. yesterday morning, he said how he talked about Jamison reportedly called for the encampment to disband, but noted that the officials were taking a measured approach to avoid an escalation that could cause a further disruption. They've been taking a measured approach since day zero. And the measured approach has gotten us to this point. So you've done a terrible job. However, we are concerned that many of these protesters occupying the encampment on College Green are seeking such a confrontation. Jamison was quoted by the Daily Pennsylvanian. We have heard reports of circulating documents with instructions of escalating a protest, including through building occupations and violence. Every day the encampment exists, the campus is left safe. Some have aimed to characterize this as a peaceful protest. It is not. So there is three college presidents, not all that were in office when a lot of this started, but they happen to be there now. And you just wonder, you just wonder what the house. It's like letting a patient get sick before you say, you know, we've got a problem here. This guy, he's about to die.
Yeah.
I thought he had a cold.
Yeah, and life-saving measures on something that's... But, you know, what I don't understand, a couple things. Why this is taking up so much bandwidth right now. Like, you know, they're not shooting people in the head out there, right? Which, I mean, they're being violent. They're saying violent things. But there's not outright, you know, murders going on like we've seen in protests past. And these college campuses are big. Are these protests, which they seem to be putting them out in front of, you know, main sites on college campuses, usually whatever the main hall is, how is that stopping schooling? Like, you get, even if these protests are happening at Spring Hill or UM, there's plenty of school, right?
Yeah, so they take up to go around.
Yeah, yet the protesters take up a certain portion of the campus. Can't you just keep working around them? I mean, the thing I do with my kids when they're being, when they have unacceptable behavior and you've tried dealing with it, sometimes the best thing to do is just leave them alone. They stop getting attention, and then they stop acting the way they are when they stop getting attention. I'm not saying that these protests are good or necessarily right. It just seems to me like extra focused attention on something that college students have been doing forever. And more than just these presidents being, you know, having weak spines and not doing anything about it, it's just the whole thing is really strange to me that this has become the central issue here in America, are these elite universities that very few people care about on any given day, but it's just taking up all the oxygen on the news channels.
Well, I think there's a, you know, stories have beginnings and middles and ends, and I think, you know, you have to cover it to the end. Like you were saying, though, you know, soon it's going to, school's going to be out. But I think the occupation of the building in Columbia, that was a turning point. And then we saw the violent response by New York police who said enough's enough. And I think it's worth discussing these things until they're thwarted and out and examine exactly what was going on. You know, after you get beat 55-0, you're having some conversations in that coach's office on Sunday that aren't real pleasant.
Right.
That's what's going on these campuses right now, considering they have been lambasted by these protests and by these agitators. And now we're like the New York Post had the story Saturday morning, like this is a lot deeper than, you know, I don't know if they were Columbia City College in New York where the cops were saying, wait a second, you're talking about the agitators being funded and everything. Remember, I think it's worth discussion because of that, because you're on the verge. Is it going to happen again? Or now is another administration building going to be occupied unlawfully? You have got that threat. They seem to be a menacing bunch of agitators. But now when you figure that these things are being funded by outside sources, remember when we were joking about it a little bit, but it was at Columbia that suddenly there was these tents everywhere, and you were joking. And,
similar, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, what's, you know, how did they got a, is there a Dick's Sporting Goods down the street on 54th? You know, what's going on here? Well, it turns out there was more to it.
And a lot of the arrests that were made, I think at each college, at least half were not students at those colleges
right.
where they were arrested.
So, yeah, there's your proof.
Looking at the text line, Ms. Texter taking issue with my theorizing that, hey, what if we just stop paying attention to these protesters? Says, you obviously have no clue how terrorists work. Don't leave them alone. You know, Peggy Sue, you don't have to kill somebody in order to be violent. All right. One person saying, I have no idea how terrorism works. Because I'm just thinking this whole thing's a little overblown. King of all unnamed texters, blah, blah, blah. Sounds like they're loving the attention. I'd say so at this point for sure. And then a lot of
you know who's loving the attention is
Hamas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't, not kids in the neighborhood, around the world, and all these people that want to see America take it on the chin, they're loving it.
Yeah, I'm just seeing more people are upset about this than the people who occupied, what was it, Cop? What were they calling that out by Atlanta?
Cop City. Yeah.
I mean, there was some discussion about that, but that was violent.
Yeah, very
and that
violent.
Was directed at law enforcement.
Yeah, and very few of those people were from Atlanta.
A lot less discussion about that than we're seeing on these college campuses. And then a lot of texts about Quinn and the short conversation we had about marijuana being not declassified, but I guess the level of drug from level one, which is the, you know, alongside the, actually crack might be level two. If I remember correctly, but you know, level one is supposedly the most dangerous of the drugs. Schedule two, less so, and then schedule three, even less so than level two.
And that, real quick, who declassifies or who's in charge of these classifications?
Well, is this the DEA.
Yeah, okay.
So the DEA, on request from the Department of Health and Human Services, DHS put out an opinion saying marijuana is not as dangerous as originally presumed. And then the DEA expected to approve that and reschedule this. Now, I thought it would take an act of Congress, but I guess these days nothing takes an act of Congress. You can just do everything through the executive branch.
Yeah.
But a lot of people taking issue with Quinn's take on marijuana and the dangers that surround it. And I believe on line one we have Derek, if we can run to him really quickly. Hey, Derek, good morning.
Hey, what's going on? Dude, you know, always got issues with Quinn, you know. But, yeah, on the marijuana thing, I mean, well, you know, he's right. I mean, you remember the mass casualty event, you know, at Woodstock. Remember how many people died from weed there?
Oh, you're talking about Woodstock.
You remember, too, the event when, you know, 2000 or 2001 when Dr. Dre released a Chronic. I mean, there was millions of people that died, you know, then.
Just from the album alone, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, just from the you look at the album and you literally had a stroke then.
Yep.
Now, on the protest, I would tell you this because you were kind of getting to the point where, you know, my thinking was going. You want to be careful for what rules you set out on the protest because one day those laws that you make can be used against you. If you go all the way back, I'm not going to take too much time. You remember right after 9/11, they had the Patriot Act, and this wide sweeping thing.
Yep.
Well, if you just pump this up and all of a sudden you say, hey, this is the way you can now protest your government because we have to think about the safety of everybody. Well, it goes both ways. I mean, look at the conversation you're having now about the FISA and the spying and all that. Same thing can happen here. So be careful of what these people want as far as you know, how they feel about the people protesting. Those emotions turns into laws. And one day, that law that you make that makes you happy now can be used against you.
But can I
but
ask
I'm
you
so happy for Jeff and Quinn, you know, saving us from ourselves.
Hey, Derek.
I mean, Jeff and Quinn, they have become my own personal, you know, saviors.
Yeah.
Anytime I feel like maybe I want to drink a soda or eat a candy bar, I'm like, no, Jeff and Quinn say I might have a stroke from it. So, you know,
well,
anyway,
Dan and Dalton are here. Dan and Dalton are here for you as well, buddy. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I agree with him about, you know, the government's going to take what they can and take more rights away from as many people as they can.
Well,
we saw that even with the Republicans joining with Democrats to make this new rule about what you are or are not allowed to say. And it's based off of anti-Semitism. But basically what they agreed to is that you're not allowed to you know, criticize the religion or someone who may be Jewish. So
take something and push it
way past the line.
Yeah, Tuberville's talking about that. I'm just talking about apply the laws that are laws now about just trespassing and, you know, apply those laws from the start.
Yeah.
I don't want new laws. I want the laws that we have enacted. Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:55 on Mobile Mornings, and hang on. Just be on your ready. We got a giveaway on the way.
Yeah, why don't we do that right now?
Sure.
We'll give tickets away right now.
We can.
Family four-pack, the Eco Wild Outdoor Expo, the only expo of its kind on the Gulf Coast, and it's coming to Mobile May 10th through 12th. That would be this coming weekend, and we have a family four-pack for caller number 4 at 251-343-0106. Caller number 4 at 343-0106, a family four-pack for the Eco Wild Outdoor Expo. And, man, this looks like a great time. It'll all get started Friday at noon at the Mobile Convention Center, and then run till 6, Saturday 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Sunday 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And they have a ton of great guest talks, educational sessions, and then, I mean, if you're thinking about bringing the kids, there's plenty. Kids fishing, hunter's education, rock wall, axe throwing, dog demonstrations, archery, honey harvesting, saltwater touch tanks. I mean, the list goes on and on. BB gun range. I'm interested in this. It says confiscated wild game trailer. I don't know if this was a trailer that was confiscated.
It's after a big bust.
For the wild game, but tickets are available at the Eco Wild Expo website. 9 and up, $15, and then military discount takes you to $12. But we'll be giving away tickets the rest of the week. Eco Wild Outdoor Expo on the way this weekend.
Also on the way, Trustville Tribune Scott Buttram, State Rep Mark Shirley, and ALGOP Chairman John Wall, all part of the Jeff Poor lineup on the way on FM Talk 106.5.
Let's do a speed read of some of these texts. Sean says, I'm with Dalton. Just ignore them. Both sides are wrong. Sean says, let the sand people sort out their own mess over there. Don says, good morning, Dan and Dalton. We think the protesters are bad now. Just wait until Donald Trump gets into office this November. And Gardner asking the same thing. This was a question he had for Quinn. Does Quinn believe these protests are all practice for what will happen if Trump is elected? And I think it is. I don't know if you call it practice, but I think if Trump wins the election, you'll see protests. I don't know where or how they'll go down, but I totally expect that to happen again.
Yeah,
what about you? Maybe.
Well, there were, you know, I say that. I guess most certainly there will be, but
the size and scope, I guess, is what's to be determined.
Yeah, 2016, people are losing their minds.
King of all unnamed texters says, blah, blah, blah. Sounds like they're loving the attention. Yeah, talking about the college protesters. Will says, it's not the government's job to tell you what you can and cannot do. There's one thing I disagree with Quinn. Reefer should be legal, should have been years ago. James says, LOL, everything he said was a lie. I guess referencing Quinn and the marijuana talk. So there you go. Some texts, 251-343-0106. We couldn't get to all of them today, but we'll be able to go through some of them tomorrow morning at 6 when we get back in here.
We got a show again tomorrow?
I think so.
Everything we did today, we got to do it again?
Yeah. The Wednesday edition. Maybe we'll do a Wikipedia Wednesday, find something interesting to talk about.
Just wearing me out. 8:59, and we've got Jeff Poor on the way.